Today is Friday, April 2nd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junaid for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, dozens killed in Taiwan rail crash.
Taiwan's fire department said there have been some 350 people on board the train. Many of them were reported to have been standing because it was so full.
Also, President Biden begins sale of his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan amid opposition.
Is deputizing five cabinet secretaries to convince the American people, but Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell says it will not get Republican support.
Plus, Myanmar anti-coup protesters stage a flower strike. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in Taiwan. Dozens of people were killed and about 70 were trapped in wreckage after a Taiwan train derailed in a tunnel north of Huilin on Friday. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
A train in Taiwan has derailed inside a tunnel, killing dozens of people. Around 70 passengers are still trapped, and 40 others have been taken to hospital in what is Taiwan's worst rail disaster in at least four decades. The train had been traveling from Taipei to Taitung when it apparently hit a truck and came off the rails north of Hualien. Images of the crash scene show carriages inside the tunnel ripped apart from the impact. Taiwan's fire department said there had been some 350 people on board the train. Many of them were reported to have been standing because it was so full. More than 80 people have been evacuated from the first four carriages, but the others are harder to reach. The accident happened at the start of the long weekend for the traditional tomb sweeping day. The last major train derailment in Taiwan was in 2018, which left 18 people dead.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. U.S. President Joe Biden has started the effort to sell his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan, but Republicans are making their opposition clear. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
We can get it done.
The president calls it a generational effort to transform the nation. He's deputizing five cabinet secretaries to convince the American people and Congress. But Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell says it will not get Republican support. In remarks aired by WFIE, McConnell called it another bid to push the nation fully left.
I'm going to fight him every step of the way.
Republicans object to the plan's corporate tax hikes. Biden spokeswoman Jen Psaki says the GOP claims to favor infrastructure improvements.
Maybe they don't believe we should pay for it.
And the president's open to hearing their ideas. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Also in the U.S., prosecutors make their case on day four in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the former police officer charged in the death of George Floyd. U.S. Jesusman Oni has more.
Seth Bravender, one of two paramedics who responded to the scene outside Cup Foods on May 25, 2020, described seeing officers on top of the patient when they arrived.
There was a gesture made with your hand. What were you attempting to do at that point in time?
Just have the officer move.
That patient, he testified, was 46-year-old George Floyd, who was still pinned under former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin's knee.
When I could see where I was at, I didn't see any breathing.
Chauvin's former supervisor criticized the prolonged use of force.
Do you have an opinion as to when the restraint of Mr. Floyd should have ended in this encounter?
Yes.
What is it?
When Mr. Floyd was no longer offering up any resistance to the officers, they could have ended their restraint.
On day four of the murder trial of the now-fired police officer, the second paramedic who provided medical assistance to Floyd took the stand. Derek Smith told jurors Floyd's pupils were dilated and that he was unable to detect a pulse.
In lay terms, I thought he was dead.
Both paramedics outlined to jurors their unsuccessful life-saving efforts.
When I showed up, he was deceased, and I dropped him off at the hospital, and he was still in cardiac arrest.
Earlier in the day, jurors heard from Floyd's girlfriend of 3 years. A mama's boy, she called him and told the jury about the first time they met.
I was so tired. We had been through so much, my sons and I. The kind person just to come up to me and say, can I pray with you? When I felt alone in this lobby, it was so sweet.
Ross also recounted how they both struggled with opioid addiction. Chauvin's defense lawyer questioned Ross about Floyd's pattern of use, including about an incident when Floyd was hospitalized because of an overdose.
You did not know that he had taken heroin at that time?
No.
Defense attorneys argue that Floyd died of unrelated medical issues and drug use. Jesus Melny, VOA News.
A boat carrying more than 1,000 survivors of a highly organized deadly attack by Islamic State-linked insurgents in northern Mozambique arrived in the port of Pemba. Survivors, many of whom walked out crying, were immediately escorted to safety by aid workers. Lucy Fielder of Reuters reports.
A boat carrying more than 1,000 survivors of a deadly attack by Islamic State-linked insurgents in northern Mozambique arrived in the port of Pemba on Thursday. Many of them distraught, as were the crowds of relatives waiting for their loved ones. Aid workers waited to give survivors food, and police and soldiers kept order. The government says dozens were killed in the highly organized attack on the gas town of Palma, which began last Wednesday. But the exact number of casualties isn't known. Mariamo Tagir was among many who fled and walked for days through the forest.
I'm so tired. It was 7 days in the bush. I'm so tired. We came across evildoers several times. The situation is really bad. There are many dead, many dead.
Tagir left her son behind in Palma.
It's very painful. I've been crying every day. I don't know where my son is. It's very painful.
Survivors have spoken of bodies in the streets, some decapitated. Reuters has been unable to independently verify accounts from Palma, and most communication was cut off after the attack began. But Tagir describes similar horrors.
They said they didn't want us. They wanted the military. The military, who were not in their uniforms, were saved. Some of them were cutting the throats of people from there.
Aid groups believe the attack displaced tens of thousands of people, many of whom fled into dense forest or attempted to escape by sea. Hundreds, including many foreign workers, have been evacuated by air. The fighting continued as recently as Tuesday, security sources said. Islamist insurgents have been increasingly active in the surrounding province of Cabo Delgado since 2017, although it is unclear what specifically they are fighting for. The district around Palma is home to natural gas projects worth $60 billion. A diplomatic source said there were roughly 1,200 displaced people on board the boat, including 300 children and 400 women. An official at the International Committee of the Red Cross said the government was screening those arriving at Pemba to prevent infiltration by armed groups.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Myanmar's military ordered wireless broadband internet services shut down as protesters continue to defy the junta. A directive from the Ministry of Transport and Communications suspended wireless broadband data services until further notice. This as Yangon residents staged, quote, a flower strike, unquote, on Friday, leaving flowers and signs at all bus stops to remember those killed during the country's unrest. The former British colony has been in chaos for 2 months following the military's overthrow of Aung San Suu Kyi's elected administration, which has sparked anger across towns and cities and reignited hostilities between the armed forces and ethnic minority insurgents in several areas. Some 543 people have been killed in the uprising, according to the Association for Political Prisoners advocacy group. The military has repeatedly said those killed had instigated violence. Protests against Haitian President Jovenel Moïse's plan to reform the constitution are mounting in the Caribbean nation. As the Moïse government prepares for a June referendum, the opposition is urging voters not to participate. VOA's Sandra Lemaire reports.
Thousands of Haitians have taken to the streets to protest President Jovenel Moïse's plan to overhaul the country's constitution. Moyes says it's deeply flawed. Protesters insist it's vital to democracy.
We consider the 1987 Constitution to be the birth certificate of Haiti's democracy. So that's why we're here in the streets defending our Constitution, this huge democratic game that the Haitian people made so many sacrifices to achieve.
The current Constitution gives significant power to the President and Prime Minister, but they must answer to a majority in Parliament. President Moïse wants to make changes to strengthen the executive branch and prevent a legislative minority from hindering the political process. In an interview with VOA Creole, Moïse defended his right to change the Constitution.
I'm not the first president to want to do this. President Preval, who served two terms, tried to amend the Constitution, and you see how that failed. He said at the time that this Constitution is a cancer for the country.
An opinion poll published in December found most Haitians are in favor of making changes to the Constitution. But protesters don't trust President Moïse to do it. Sandra Lemaire, VOA News.
Egypt's Suez Canal Authority says the container ship that blocked traffic in the strategic waterway for nearly a week is being held with its crew while the accident is investigated. Egypt reportedly lost $1 billion from the closure of the canal and efforts to refloat the ship. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Saeed Sadek, who teaches political sociology in Cairo, says investigators urgently need to find the causes of the accident.
If it is not done, then you will be in trouble. Because in this case, according to international law, in the Suez Canal law, the goods will be confiscated. And so that if there is anything inside, it will be revealed. If there are children, if there are nuclear bombs, anything will be revealed.
The ship is expected to be detained for 2 weeks. Sadek says both Egyptian and international investigators are at work on the case.
And now this ship is under scrutiny, and they will not leave the Greater Lakes where they are being now kept until all investigations are done. There has to be agreement who will pay the damages. We are talking about billions of dollars that will be paid.
Dr. Paul Sullivan, a professor at Washington-based U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that it is normal procedure for Egypt and the Suez Canal Authority to seek compensation for the accident, but adds that with expected negotiations and court proceedings, it could take a long time for the matter to be settled. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is the Voice of America. Christians in the Holy Land are marking Good Friday this year amid signs the coronavirus crisis is winding down. However, the virus is still raging in many predominantly Christian countries. Religious sites in the Holy Land are open, but there will be none of the mass pilgrimages usually seen in the week leading up to Easter. Anti-Indian clashes have erupted between government forces and residents of a village in disputed Kashmir following a gun battle in which troops killed three suspected militants. Police and residents say the gunfire erupted after counterinsurgency police and soldiers launched an operation based on tip about the presence of militants in the village. Niger is swearing in its new president in the West African nation's first democratic transfer of power. Newly elected President Mohamed Bazoum's inauguration Friday comes days after Niger's security forces thwarted an attempted military coup at the presidential palace earlier this week. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Amid a sharp uptick in harassment and attacks in the U.S. against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, the AAPI community, many Asian American journalists say they are being targeted at work. VOA's Jason Patinkin reports.
One day after the mass killing in Atlanta that left six Asian American women and two others dead last month, at least five Asian American journalists were harassed while out reporting. Journalists with ethnic roots in Asia are being caught in a broader wave of hate crimes against Asian American and Pacific Islander, or AAPI, people during the coronavirus pandemic. The Asian American Journalists Association, or AAJA, has been following incidents of harassment against its members. Naomi Takuyan Underwood is the group's executive director.
So there has been an uptick, especially since last year, of Asian Americans being attacked. We've heard from our members who have experienced harassment online and on social media. We've also heard from members who are experiencing harassment on the job. And a lot of AAPI journalists also fear for their family at this very moment because of what happened in Georgia.
CNN correspondent Amara Walker was among those harassed. She said someone yelled virus at her before a live interview in the Georgia city. And VOA journalist Paris Huang says two white people harassed him and three other Asian American journalists outside the White House. Huang, who covers the White House for VOA's Mandarin service, was about to begin a live broadcast when a man and woman approached a separate crew of Korean language journalists and started asking questions.
The blonde woman said, "Did you get permission to film the White House?" And then she went on and say, "We are American. You are not. You're foreigners. We have the right to stop you filming our White House."
As Huang started speaking Mandarin on air, they came over. Huang says his producer had to block the couple with his body from interrupting their broadcast.
If you have Asian face, you are seen as foreigners, and you have less right compared to people who think they are who are Americans, which is not true. If that's people's perception of you and possible violence have been conducted to other people in a similar ethnicity, that of course it make me worry when I go out to do my job on the street or in public places.
AAJA's Underwood believes the increased harassment stems from former President Donald Trump's rhetoric during the pandemic.
In light of the past administration, journalists, and especially journalists of color and Asian American journalists, are being targeted for two reasons: the distrust of media, as well as the increased hate incidents against Asian Americans due to the coronavirus being called things like China virus or the Wuhan virus or the Kung Flu.
Female AAPI reporters find themselves targets of racism, anti-journalism, and misogyny. Sophia Choi, a journalist at WSB-TV in Atlanta, told an Atlanta Press Club panel that she has been repeatedly targeted with sexually explicit material and messages.
I think any Asian woman in the public eye will tell you we get emails and videos and things from our constituents or our viewers that no other race seems to. I mean, I get porn sent my way, you know, quite often. And when I block somebody, they very often find another way to contact me. And they're very confused as to why I blocked them, because they thought I liked that kind of stuff. It's happened throughout my career.
Underwood says the harassment takes a mental health toll on AAPI reporters.
Asian American journalists are under a lot of strain and pain right now, but I really have to lift up the leadership that they've taken in their newsrooms and really reporting on the experiences of the Asian American community right now.
For Asian American journalists, that means covering the racism, even as they are targeted by it. Jason Patinkin, VOA News, Washington.
A new study warns developing countries will have difficulty recovering from the devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic without relief from crushing debt burdens that mire them in poverty. The United Nations Development Program is releasing the study ahead of next week's World Bank International Monetary Fund meetings. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN study finds 120 low- and middle-income economies will owe more than $1 trillion in debt service payments this year. It reports 72 countries, classified as vulnerable, are responsible for more than half that accumulated debt. UNDP Administrator Achim Steiner says these 72 countries are facing sovereignty or liquidity challenges that will crowd out important socioeconomic expenditures crucial for the well-being of their people.
We need bold new mechanisms. These are urgently needed to help low- and middle-income countries address crippling debt
which has been sharply worsened by COVID-19 and which will prevent vital investments to tackle poverty and climate change for years to come.
Steiner says most of the advanced economies are looking forward to a rapid recovery from the pandemic this year. However, the same cannot be said for the poorer countries. He says they are facing increasing poverty as COVID-19 continues to wreak havoc with the physical and economic health of their societies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian startup Griseed has created a Wi-Fi-enabled cooling box that keep blood, medicine, and vaccines at the correct temperature while being transported in the tropical heat. Angela Okomado of Reuters reports.
Distributing vaccines across Nigeria's hot and dry terrain is no easy feat. The country's limited facilities mean that medical samples need to be collected and transported, often through poorly maintained roads, to laboratories sometimes miles away. So last year, the government hired logistics startup Grid to help transport temperature-sensitive items. The company now uses cold chain monitoring boxes to move blood and plasma samples and vaccine vials. The cold boxes run on solar-powered batteries that can keep the units working for up to 24 hours. And they are the brainchild of Nigerian engineer-turned-entrepreneur Ogunetega Eyotim.
If you look at the African terrain, you know that some of the major challenges are, one, communication, but secondly, which is more importantly, the lack of access to grid, which is access to power. And so for that, when you look back, you would see that there were challenges around accessing ice packs or ice gels that are required to precondition when transporting things like vaccines or samples from the last mile to the city. With this now, which, you know, this is like a solar-powered, battery-powered device that doesn't require all those. So without the infrastructure, this works.
The company launched its Wi-Fi-linked cooler boxes in 2019, meaning customers can track products and their temperatures in real time using a mobile application. The company charges at least $2.5 for delivery services, depending on the weight and distance packages are going. They plan to expand to other African countries, supporting health sectors and beyond.
That's Angela Okomado of Reuters. SpaceX had another rough day, but still names the members of its all-civilian crew. Plus, a new study examines the effects of long-term space travel on the human body. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the week in space.
2, 1.
Private spaceflight company SpaceX successfully test-launched its crewless Starship 11 this week from a foggy Boca Chica, Texas. The test came to an abrupt end minutes later when the rocket appeared to explode on its way back down to Earth.
1 kilometer altitude.
SpaceX engineer John Innsbrucker was providing commentary at the time.
When we got to 10 kilometers, the entry, we had some nice views from the exterior camera showing the flaps were quiet as we descended. But then we had the camera freeze up as we got into the engine ignition sequence, and so we're going to have to find out from the team what happened.
Innsbrucker spoke over the final frozen image received from Starship 11, and he made it clear that the video feed would not return. Pieces of debris crashed as far as 8 kilometers from the landing site. Meanwhile, a U.S. congressional committee this week announced an investigation into safety requirements regulators say the company violated on a commercial launch in December. But there is good news from SpaceX. The company announced the final members of the crew it plans to send on what it calls the world's first all-civilian mission to space. The Inspiration 4 mission now includes an engineer and a teacher and is slated to launch no earlier than mid-September from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. SpaceX held a fundraising raffle to select the crew. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.